check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Today on the On Inquirer podcast, it's Mike LaTulip time. A On Inquirer basketball analyst breaks down his thoughts on Illinois advancing to the Sweet 16. Yes, for the first time in 19 years, Illinois will play in the Sweet 16. And boy, they have a huge test in front of them for potentially the next two games if they're fortunate enough to win their first. They have Iowa State, number two seed, that was in the mix for a number one seed on Thursday at 9:10-ish, 9:30-ish. Central time, about 10:30 local time in Boston at the TD Garden on Thursday night. And if they win that one, most likely, the defending national champion and one of the better teams we've seen, I think, in the last several years, the number one overall seed UConn Huskies are awaiting probably in that Elite Eight. But Mike gives his thoughts on what he saw from Illinois in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament, what he thinks of Terrence Shannon's postseason epic performance here, and we get a great breakdown of Illinois against Iowa State. What are the keys to Illini dealing with the number one defense in the country and advancing to the Elite Eight? Michael Tulip joins us next to break it all down. Welcome into the Illini Inquirer podcast, the Sweet 16 version, with Mike LaTulip, our Illini Inquirer basketball analyst. How's that sound, Mike? Illinois finally back here after 19 years.
Sounds great. It's got a ring to it, right? Yeah, I feel like 2013, we were close. You know, we had a Kenny Kaji tipped ball that potentially could have gone our way, should have gone our way if there was under 2 minute review, but we didn't get it done. And thankfully, these guys here in 2024 have done it, and it's just been, man, it's been such a blast, even just up to this point, covering this team, and you still feel like there's meat on the bone. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't feel like this is a destination, the Sweet 16. It feels like it's part of the journey for these guys.
I got a question for you later about that, but I want to focus on why is this team? Why is this the team that was able to get here? Of all these, I mean, your team in 2013 was a really good team. We're so close to getting there. 2021, we know. 2022, tough draw with Houston. But why was this the team to get there?
This could be a really long answer, yeah, but I'll give you the shorter version of it. I just think this team's ability to shapeshift throughout the season. I mean, on the one hand, you play Oakland and Marquette in back-to-back games earlier in the season and score 64 points. And at that point, let's just stick offensively, you know, you start off with these more like spread and open concepts, and then eventually you get to the point of going to more booty ball and back downs with Damask, and then, oh my gosh, what are you going to do with Ty Rogers? And then you move Ty Rogers and make him more of a five-man, put him in screening actions, get him more involved to make these other teams pay for it. And then as the season goes on, you keep having different iterations of this offense. Like just here in March, we've seen these staggers with Terrence Shannon where it's, hey, let's get Terrence on the move a little bit where we can set a stagger for him. If he comes off, great. If he rejects it, we pop Ty, we swing it to Ty, get Ty into a dribble handoff of Marcus Damask. Like this, you know, it's not like they just came into the season and had this offense and we're off to the races. They've evolved. And the only way that you can evolve is one, if you have the players that can do it, and two, if you have like the mental makeup of those players to do it. Because you made a major shift in the season to go to back downs and go to booty ball, and that booty ball was not putting the ball in the hands of Terrence Shannon. It was putting the ball in the hands of Marcus Damask. And there are a lot of guys that are in Terrence Shannon's position that would have a problem with that.
Yeah.
And Terrence Shannon doesn't. And that's why you can be the team that you are, is because of those type of guys. Those guys are about winning. And you go on down the line, right? When you have a guy at the top like that, Terrence, and I'll throw Marcus in there too. Like, Marcus is about ball. Marcus is about winning. Now, when all these other guys, when Quincy Guerrier gets shelved for 16 minutes against Indiana, Mattye Rodgers gets shelved for the last 12 minutes against Northwestern, those guys don't have issues. Like, they don't become a problem. Dre Gibbs-Lawhorn stays ready, knocks down big shots against Morehead State, has a great showing in the Big Ten tournament. Dane Danger stays ready, right? Like, we can talk about, you know, what they did defensively, where you're switching 1 through 5, then you go into drop, where you're keeping matchups, now you're more selectively switching. That's evolved. You cannot evolve like that and make those changes without this, like, these types of guys that are willing to do that and keep the main thing, which is it going to help us win? Great, let's do it. And that is why they're where they are right now, is because of all those changes, but the mental makeup of this team.
You know, until they get to a Sweet 16, like, there's all these questions about Brad Underwood in the NCAA tournament. But I'm just thinking about when they hired him. I was thinking, did they find their John Beilein, the schematic wonder, who's going to find these under-recruited guys and develop them into all Big Ten, all American types, and runs this system, the spread system, you know, like, just kind of the system schematic guy. And I think back of one of Underwood's best strengths is his ability to change, his ability to pivot, whether it's in season, thinking about what he runs, or just getting talent and changing what he does to that talent. I think he's evolved a lot as a coach here, and I think it all leads to this, Mike, whether it's the offense, who he went and got in the offseason after, you know, trying different things the last couple of years of personnel. I think this is a culmination for Brad Underwood and his ability to check the ego at the door and you know, change to what he needs to win, whether it's in the Big Ten to get Kofi and Io and change based on that, or whether it's, hey, we need to win the NCAA tournament. How do we get there?
Yeah, no, he's done about just as good a job as anybody at doing that. I mean, I think he does such a good job of molding game plan and scheme around his personnel. And that's not easy to do year after year. There's a ton of stubbornness out there in college basketball of coaches that are like, here's my system, get players in, players, you know, jam them into that system. And if you can't fit that system, you can't play. Or if you can't fit that system, now you gotta go get other guys that do. And we've had these different iterations of teams and that came in. You know, the first couple of years that Brad Underwood was here, those teams weren't very talented. So what did they do? They had to turn you over. They had to get into you. They had to deny passing lanes. They had to do all these little things to try to steal possessions. And then you get Kofi Coburn, and then you get Io DeSumo. And it's like, hey, we have Io, but we kind of have to play 4-out-1-in with Kofi and just play off the gravity that he creates. And then Kofi leaves. And then last year you have more, you know, middle of the season last year where they kind of turned things around because it was bleak there in non-conference. They went to more of the spread concepts and played more, you know, with Coleman at, you know, at that, you know, whatever, extended elbow spot. And that was what they did pretty much the rest of the season. And now you get, you know, after that 22-23 season, you shifted who you go after.
Yeah.
It's, let's go get some mid-major guys that are hungry, that just want to win. And that, I think, is permeated. And there just aren't a ton of coaches that do that. Or, you know, it's been widely covered, the conversation that Brad Underwood had with Jay Wright mm-hmm. after the Tennessee game. And some coaches would be like, well, what if I adopt Jay Wright's way of thinking, and then if we're super successful, everyone credits Jay Wright. Who cares?
Right.
Just go and win. And I talk about all these guys being about winning. It starts at the top because that's what the staff's about. That's what Brad's about. That's you know, that's even the only holdover since I've been there is Fletch. And if I know one thing about Fletch, Fletch is about winning too. And those guys spent a lot of time with him as well. So it is it's across the department, if you will, there.
So on top of the Big Ten success, what does this mean for the program? Just to get back here, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I think it reinforces the success that the program's had over the last 5 years. It's just, you know, we do this weird thing with the NCAA tournament. We've talked about it, right? Where, you know, the difference between this game and that game is the difference between, you know, generalizing whether or not this guy's a good coach or not a good coach, or this team's a good team or not a good team, or, hey, this team's who we thought they were, or, hey, this team surprised us. You know, we even see the narratives throughout the tournament now, where it's like the Big Ten goes 3-0 and the ACC goes 6-1 right now. And it's like, well, did we underestimate these conferences? And or the SEC is a horrible conference. And but for this program, once you get to this Sweet 16, it's a bigger stage, man. I mean, the eyes that are on you, from high school recruits to guys in the portal to NBA scouts. We always think back to I think it was 2014 or 2015 when Michigan State made the run to the Final Four, and then all of a sudden Denzel Valentine and Travis Trice are getting NBA looks because they just got to that stage and played their game, and so everyone benefits when you get to this stage. So it means a lot to the program. It means a lot to the fans. I mean, you see people on social media where there's like 22-year-old kids that don't remember a Sweet 16. They don't remember 05 because they were 3 years old, right? And so that type of stuff is, there's lasting memories across the board for the team, for the staff, for the players, for the fans. And, you know, I hope there's a really good showing out in Boston, because you just never know. I mean, you never know how many times it's going to happen. I think after 05, there's no way anyone thought it was going to be 19 years.
Yeah. I would think, Mike, a Big Ten tournament championship, 28 wins, a Sweet 16, that's a successful season for basically anybody. But now it's time to get greedy, because an Elite Eight is an elite season, obviously. A Final Four is one of the best seasons ever in Illinois history. So now it's time for this team, I would imagine, to go get greedy. But what impressed you most? What makes you think they can advance after that dominance against Duquesne?
Yeah, well, the Duquesne game in particular, just that game was over in the first minute and a half. And you could tell just watching it, the disposition these guys had, just the importance I think they put on that game. Not in I say that and you're like, well, hey, it's a round of 32 to get to the Sweet 16. There's plenty of teams where if you don't have the right mental makeup, like I referenced earlier in the pod, it's exhale, we got Duquesne. Could have had BYU, we get the 11 seed, and then you get popped. Like, we've seen teams do that year after year after year. And they came in, and when you had all these games over the past, even in the postseason alone, where you've got down and climbed back, that wasn't the case. That wasn't the case in this game. They stepped on them and stepped on them from the beginning. And, what was the game plan going into it? We talked about it. Take those two guards away. They did that right off the bat. Terrence Shannon, I thought, was incredible to start that game on the defensive end. And we can, we'll talk about obviously what he's done to this point, but you took care of business, and the maturity within that goes a long way, because you win a Big Ten tournament. All this talk about, do you want to win it? Do you want to, go far in it, rest, this and that? Hey, isn't it cool winning a Big Ten tournament and then going to a Sweet 16?
Yeah.
Just like we talked about, where that has been the history with the champions for that team. I was talking the other day to Hummel about this, and he's like, dude, I in 2010, that like springboarded us into a Sweet 16, winning the Big Ten tournament. Because I don't think they were a one seed that year, but they were able to win that, and it got them feeling good. I mean, all that stuff matters. So, that's what I've been most impressed with this team, was last year didn't have the maturity to be able to turn the page. Didn't have the maturity to, turn the page after a loss, but turn the page after a win as well, where you have that whole celebration after the Big Ten tournament, and now you got to reset and do it again for the NCAA tournament. They've done a hell of a job of that.
All right, let's weigh on this fun topic, because it's kind of ridiculous that two of the last superstars, and we're not even talking about a third one in Kofi Coburn, but is Terrence Shannon Jr. having the best season ever for Illini, and why or why not? I mean, obviously, Ayo Dosunmu, Kendall Gill would be in this, Nick Anderson would be in this, but it really comes down, I think, to Ayo and Terrence the last couple of years, not to mention Kofi and his consensus first-team All-American season.
We talked about this a little bit before Moorhead,
yeah,
right? And I was wavering.
Me too.
I was wavering a tad. I'm there. I think it's the best ever. And, granted, you'll have – I had somebody tweet at me the other day and CC'd me and asked if this was the best Illini season. It said, Terrence Shannon's having the best Illini season since, and I said ever.
Yeah.
But you see everyone chiming in, and you can tell different eras will think different. People that are more recent, or like, you can't forget about Io. People that are, more from the 80s era are like Nick Anderson and Kendall Gill and, you know, D. Brown and Darren Williams. And I just think that, you know, when you have an All-American already, and I get he was third team, he's a first team All-American. I feel pretty confident saying that. You have a first team All-American, you have a first team All-Big Ten guy, and honestly, you have a Big Ten player of the year if he doesn't overlap with a generational big man.
Right.
Right? Like, I think he would have at least had one of those. He definitely would have gotten it this year if Zach Edey were to have moved on to the NBA last season. But, you know, how do you weigh it? And you can't reference all the time, because people talk about, oh, legends are made in March and postseason this and postseason that. I honestly, God, I mean, this is one of the best postseason runs that I think I've seen from a player
of any
forget Illini history,
like Kemba, like that's right. That's about it, right? Like,
yeah, it's similar. And so it's Illini history, Big Ten history, college basketball. I mean, this is, you're talking about a guy that in five games on the way to a conference tournament championship and then past the first weekend is, you know, I think 53% from the field, 41 from three, and 88 from the line. Average, you know, whatever it is, 30 points a game. It's crazy. And then what he's doing defensively as well, it's just, you know, it is, you know, and that's not to take away from the other Illini, because that's, I think that's what you fall into, is like, I can make the comment of, this is the best Illini season that I've seen, and that's probably taken place without discrediting what those other guys did, because, you know, unfortunately for Kofi and Io, they kind of cancel each other out.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you could look at it both ways, where it's like a Kobe Shaq thing where, okay, you know, everybody was reluctant to give it solely to Kobe because he had Shaq, and everybody was, you know, reluctant to give it to Shaq because Shaq had Kobe. And that's kind of the cross you bear when you have two really good guys like that, where when you look at the KenPom National Player of the Year rankings from that year, they were 6 and 7, which is pretty insane. So, you know, look, what are your thoughts? Because you were wavering.
Yeah, too. No, I
guess you had Iowa last time.
Going into the tournament, I said I would still go with Iowa at this point because better distributor. I thought just the leadership of Iowa was next level. But I did think Terrence is a better defender. Iowa, I thought, had more to give defensively that season. I said the one thing that opens the door is if Shannon gets to a Sweet 16, that might be the trump card that he gets in over him. I was just looking up Kemba's postseason numbers from 11, Mike. 11 straight wins to close that postseason, 24.6 points a game, 43% from the field. Terrence is, what, 50? And then three-pointers, 24% from the field. Just put that in perspective. Terrence is averaging 31 a game, right? Like, if he gets to a Final Four, Mike, like, we're talking about Terrence Shannon and that Kemba level postseason territory.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. I mean, I think it's you've kind of just felt it building in the Big Ten tournament and then into this tournament. And yeah, I mean, he hasn't blinked, and that is what's so crazy, because like I'm not even kidding you. I think back to that Arkansas game last year in the NCAA tournament. I don't even remember Terrence Shannon
until like the last 10 minutes, like 5 minutes maybe.
Yeah, last 5 minutes they started getting going a little bit, started hitting some shots. But like, by and large, in that game, you don't remember a lot of Illinois players from that game. RJ Melendez had like a little run there in the second half, but other than that, it was a pretty forgettable game. And yeah, no, it really is like a generational type of run. You know, and what's crazy is simultaneously you have Zach Edey kind of doing the same thing. Like in the NCAA tournament, at least is, you know, his numbers for the first two games are like Shaq and, you know, David Robinson and maybe one other person that's done it. So I, you know, as much as Purdue and Illinois fans want to go back and forth, I think it's pretty darn cool you get these two guys overlapping at the same time, because I don't know, it just makes it more fun. And the last thing I'll say too, and this is again,
I wish we would have had like Io and Luka to have that kind of tournament success. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like with Io, and I'm trying to paint a picture here. Like I love Io to death. I think he's a big reason why this program even got back to the point that it was at. It was him. It was not only him deciding to come to Illinois, but staying at Illinois.
I still mentioned this in my mailbag. Somebody asked me who the best player of the Underwood era is. I said I still went with Io, just because he's the most important player. He played here 3 years. I would have taken sophomore year Io over last year Shannon. But this year, it's just Shannon's having the best single seed. I just think at this point, that's what it is. But yeah, he's still the reason this is what it is.
Yeah, I think it gets a lot. Yeah, it gets the argument kind of gets convoluted where we're talking single season. And they said, you know, one seed, this and that. I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, like once you get to that point of having a one seed, you know, you're up so high that fall is even harder when you lose to a Loyola. And just going back and watching that game and even looking, like Iowa did not play well that game.
No.
Like Iowa was not good in that game.
Lucas Williamson outplayed him.
Yeah, and even in the Big Ten title game, right? I think Iowa was 5 for 17 from the field, and Curbelo was great late. So, obviously, you know, Kofi had, you know, was got going as well, but that team was so talented. You go back and look, and you're like, geez, I mean, the guy that you forget about sometimes is freaking Trent Frazier.
Mm-hmm.
And how could you forget about Trent and like what Jacob did on that team and
DeMonte made
so
big
I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to minimize what Io did, because I don't. You could argue, you know, Illinois might not even be in a Sweet 16 right now if it's not for Io, just with the importance that he had to this program. It's just single season. I still can't wrap my head around the fact that he broke the single season scoring record and missed 6 games.
And he's adding to it. It's insane. Like,
yeah, I mean, you're talking about like another, what, 120, 130 points added to that if he plays in those games. It's just, it's crazy. But it's a sign of the times, because the fact that you, even in the last 5 years, it's not like we're just solely debating Terrence Shannon and Kendall Gill. It's like you have that era, you have 05, and then you have the, you know, the early 2020s where you're even throwing in single season stuff for guys that played 3 years ago.
That's right.
It's just, you know, Kofi and Io, it's, I don't know.
It's a hell of a run.
Sign of the times, man.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
All right, Mike, here we go. Sweet 16 matchup. You get the number one offense in the country, Illinois, against the number one defense in the country in Iowa State. I think this and Creighton, Tennessee are the matchups I'm most looking forward to in the Sweet 16 here. So what do you think of this Illini offense against this Cyclones pressure defense? Feels like that's the story of the game here.
It's an insane Sweet 16 matchup.
Yeah.
It really is. I think it's really rare to get number one face off with number one in this in this type of game, but it should be a lot of fun. I think, you know, when you're watching Iowa State, and there's a lot of talk about their defense, rightfully so, they're still a good offensive team. I mean, this isn't one of those things where it's like, hey, if we just play well offensively, we'll win this game. You're gonna have to guard them, and you're gonna have to limit them to one shot and get out in transition. But sticking to their defense specifically, and I think what you'll see when you watch them is there's kind of a misnomer for you know, the Houstons of the world, the Iowa States of the world, like those teams that are in the upper echelon defensively. And the natural inclination is to think that those type of teams are like, gosh, they're just so principle oriented and they're in the right spot every time. It's almost the opposite for Iowa State. I mean, what they do defensively is almost complete and utter randomness.
Chaos.
And it causes confusion, it causes chaos, And it really, that is what I think bothers a lot of teams offensively when they play them, because, you know, the way that they, you know, they'll have certain principles, right? You know, if you're going to back downs and you're Marcus Dumas, the guy will flip his feet, he'll force you to the baseline, he'll corral you there. That's where they do a lot of their traps. They trap a lot out of ball screens at times. But you'll see sometimes it's just, it's on the players. It's like the player's jurisdiction to determine whether or not they're going to trap. And there's this like spatial awareness that they have defensively where, you know, if I'm baseline out of bounds and I inbound it and you want to get it to the ball side corner, and the big man that's guarding the baseline out of bounds guy, if he's close enough, he'll just go trap. I mean, and that may be a principle of theirs. It might not, because you can see when you're watching him, he wants to like run away, but he realizes that he's close enough to go trap. So he runs over, and that's what you have. I mean, though, the one thing you have to, I mean, there's a lot of things you gotta recognize when you're playing them. Where is Taman Lipsey and where is Keshawn Gilbert? Like, where are those guys? Because they will go completely off script. They will roam and they will go completely out of position. I mean, I'll give one example here. I mean, this is why they're tough to play against. I'm on the left wing and I'm getting a ball screen on a cleared side. So it's me and a big man, and I'm coming off going towards the middle of the floor. We got a big man rolling to the basket. So what's going to happen is you have the ball screen defender that's guarding you, and when I hit that pocket pass to that big man, it's going to prompt a guy from the weak side on the bottom to rotate over, right? That's what usually happens. So now you have that, you know, once you hit that big man, now that big man can maybe skip, and now you're playing out of it. You'll see on the film, Keshawn Gilbert will be guarding the weak side corner, and he will move himself all the way over to the ball side block and just stand there. And you'll throw a bounce pass right into his lap, because that is poor principles by him, but that's what they do. I mean, that is, they will completely mess you up. And if you want to predetermine reads, they'll just steal the ball. So you have, like, it's about simplifying things when you're playing against them. But that's where these teams get you, is you come in, you're like, it's this number one defense, and where are they coming from? And you overthink things, and you play sped up. So you have to simplify the game, right? Because you'll see on the film, like, you come off, you drive down the lane. If Gilbert wants to stand right where the roll man is and his guy is in the opposite corner, you just keep your head up. There will be a wide open guy in the opposite corner. I mean, they give up the rate of threes that they give up to field goals attempted. It's one of the highest in the country. Like, you will get 3-point shots. It's just the quality that matters.
So what's the key for a guy like Marcus Dumas, who's got to be making those decisions, Mike, and the keys for guys playing off him?
Yeah, I think luckily for Illinois, they're not, compared to a lot of other teams in college basketball, and compared particularly to a lot of teams in the Big 12, they're not a heavy ball screen team.
Yeah.
Like, that's not their main form of offense like it is for a lot of teams, and that's where Iowa State can get you a lot of times. But what they are is a back down, you know, Marcus Dumas, booty ball type of team, so he's going to see a ton of traps. He's going to see a ton of doubles. And the doubles that he's going to see are arguably unlike any doubles that he's seen.
Correct.
This year. So, like, he's got to be really good. He's got to be really good. And the other point that I'll make too, and I'll touch on this in the film, is, and I've talked about this over the course of the past few weeks, but when you're Marcus Dumas and you're backing down on that wing, okay, and that second guy comes, he's going to come from under the basket, okay? So when you get that second guy to rotate over and you throw it out to Coleman Hawkins' ball side, it has got to be a race to get that ball to the opposite wing, to the opposite corner for 3-point shots, for driving long closeouts. You'll see the second you catch and look, it's over. Mm. They've rotated out, they've squared back up, and now you're putting yourself in a position to potentially take a tough shot to finish out the shot clock. So you'll see Houston at times would do it where they rotated out, and instead of rotating it around the arc, they went right back into the help. You got to find those creases, and honestly, you just got to be ready to shoot the ball, and you got to be ready to play in general.
That's why my X factor for this one is Coleman. Like, that get out the ball, top of the key, whether it's shoot, pass, or drive that lane, Mike. I just feel like he's going to be massive here, because he's going to have pressure on him too, but he's also going to have, I think, a lot of offensive opportunities in this one.
No, he is. He's a big part of this game, and you know, I'll give you another X factor here in a second. But yeah, I mean, the way that they play out of those doubles is to me the game. But you could also argue too that the game is how they fared defensively against Iowa State. Because if you're not guarding against Iowa State, they don't have offensive zeros. You know, right. they have guys that can play. And so you put that much more strain on your offense when you're not getting stops. And when you're not getting stops, you can't get out in transition. And when you can't get out in transition, like, that's where I think this Iowa State defense is susceptible in some areas. But look, like, and even on the defensive end, right, it's Lipsy, it's Gilbert, it's keeping those guys out of the paint, because those guys are wrecking balls when they get into the paint. They'll draw fouls. Gilbert in particular will shot fake you to death, get you up on your feet, try to get to the line. You got to be aware of that. And then both of them, Lipsy and Gilbert, take more shots off the dribble than they do catch and shoot. And for comparison, Terrence Shannon's taken about 60 more shots catch and shoot than off the dribble this year. Part of that's a product because of how many ball screens they set. That's a big function of their offense. Like, you'll see, depending on which big is in, so if it's Hassan Ward, they're going to do a lot of ball screen, rim run, lobs. When it's Robert Jones, they'll play through him a little bit more. Like, he's a better passer. They'll, you know, have him on the perimeter. They'll go five out. They'll go dribble handoffs. They'll go zoom actions. So they play in a variety of ways, and they're good on that end. And then the last person I'll mention is Momcilovic. Yeah. Like, I honestly, like, he's a freshman. I think he's their best offensive player. Like, he's a stud, man. He's an absolute pro. So you just got to be aware with those guys, because it's not just how you fare against them on the offensive end and taking care of the ball and all that stuff. You got to guard them to you know, not put that type of strain on your offense.
Yeah, so, I mean, ball screens, they've struggled against guards like that, Mike. So is there anybody in the Big Ten you kind of compare their offense to? Because, I have doubts of whether Iowa State can score into the 80s against Illinois, if they can keep up with that pace. But, I mean, Penn State did, right? Like, so Illinois does have to bring it defensively still.
Yeah, it is. Honestly, it is kind of like Penn State. Mm. I mean, Penn State will run a lot of high ball screens, double drags. I mean, they'll run that type of stuff, and then they'll try to create – some havoc defensively. Now, Iowa State is, right, you know, 10 times the team that Penn State is. So you just got to be aware of that. You got to fight over ball screens. You got to square these guys up. You got to get, you know, if they're going to take shots off the bounce, you got to be able to rear view contest, all the things that we've talked about throughout the season. But I'll give you another X factor for this game is Dane Danger. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's a game that he can play it. And, you know, why that's so important is not about the offensive end. It's about the defensive end, because I just mentioned Momcilovic and how good he is. He's 6'8", and he does a lot of what Damas does, because all these he will post smaller wings in the Big 12, and my God, is he skilled. Fadeaways, spin moves. I mean, he's got it all, and he hits it at such a high rate. I think that's Coleman. Coleman could draw that matchup. It may not be right off the bat, because you got some of those other bigs Coleman probably has to guard. But I think at some point, Dane Danger being in there will shift Coleman over to Momcilovic. And that is, you know, that's a matchup that you feel pretty good about, because you get more length on him to be able to contest some of the tough shots that he takes. So I'm looking at Dane to be an X factor. But Marcus Damask and Terrence Shannon got to be X factor. Like, if those two aren't good, I don't see you making it to an Elite Eight. So, yeah. It's amazing at this point. Like, you play these good of teams, like, it's not just two guys playing well. You got to have a lot of guys on their P's and Q's.
Well, and what a weekend for Dane, right? 13-13 from the field, following a really good Big Ten tournament. It's been awesome to see it. It just, as you said, Mike, it allows him to be more versatile.
No, I agree. And I think, once again, if you're any of these teams prepping for Illinois, you're watching Dane Danger, and you're like, this is a backup big? it's probably all these teams are like, man, this would be our starting big, most likely. It's just Illinois is that talented offensively, to have a guy that can come in like that and be a complete change up with kind of how you play and how you defend. It's you know, he's making a name for himself. Like, he's, you know, for a guy that was playing really limited minutes at different points in the season, to have him be able to kind of get his footing and put on this type of performance in March is pretty incredible.
All right, Mike, if I'm an Illinois fan, I'm concerned about the pressure defense and how Illinois handles that. We talked about the things Iowa State does, but if I'm Illinois, I feel really good that I have the best player on the court, potentially two of the best players on the court with him and Damask, but also just maybe the front court and the way it's playing with Dane Danger there. So I'm not asking for a score prediction or anything, but how do you see this one kind of going?
Well, let's talk about the teams that have had success against Iowa State this year and how they've won. I mean, a lot of times I'll kind of go piece by piece here, but yep. The teams that have had success, you're either taking care of the ball or you're making threes or both. Right? I think for this Illinois team, if you aren't taking care of the ball, you better be making threes. You better be making outside shots. If you're not making outside shots, you better be taking care of the ball. If you're not doing either, it's gonna be a short trip to Boston. So those things you definitely have to be aware of. And then I think, you know, part of the, you know, I just mentioned being able to limit them one and done on the defensive end for you to be able to get defensive rebounds and get out in transition. Like, I think they're susceptible in transition because now you're making them have to guard space. Whereas, you know, they're much better in close quarters where they can trap and overwhelm you. And so we'll show that on the film as well, where you have to manage your lanes when you run in transition to spread them out, to allow Terrence Shannon, to allow some of these other guys to get downhill and put pressure on the rim. Because really, like, their rim rate and the way they protect the rim is not – it's not incredibly high. And the last point that I'll make is they are gettable on the offensive glass. You can get them. Part of that is because they do force a lot of threes, so there's those opportunities to be had. But part of that is because they're in rotation. Yeah. And because they run around, there's going to be guys that have free runs to the rim. Ty Rogers, Quincy Guerrier, Dane Danger, particularly for a guy like Dane, when Hassan Ward's in the game, Terrence Shannon's driving, Marcus Damascus driving, that is a guy that's going to detach from you to go block shots. We talked about that all the time with Kofi, where it's like those futile attempts to go and block shots, like, you better make sure you connect on them. That's where they get killed on the offensive glass, because he wants to go block shots. He detaches from you, and now you got Dane Danger, Coleman Hawkins, some of these other guys flying in to clean up and late. Like, that is, to me, that's the game, right? I know that's a lot of different keys, but they're a really good team. So you got to be good in all these different areas. So, you know, I it's hard to sit here and be like, you know, I love the matchup, right? You know, you're not playing.
I don't think either team does, right?
Like, yeah, neither team does. There's things that Illinois does that hurts Iowa State because they're not efficient in those areas. And there's things Iowa State does that hurts Illinois. So, you know, and you could go across the board for all these matchups in the Sweet 16. Like, there aren't teams, like, especially with the way this tournament's played out and the matchups that we have. I mean, you're talking about, there's some toss-ups across the board. Mm-hmm. So the last thing I'll say is, you're coming into the Sweet 16. You're the number one offense in the country. You're playing extremely well. Like, you have earned the right to be confident in what you do in this game. Like, you've earned that right. Like, you can't come into this game and be like, number one defense, now we're on our heels, now we're playing sped up. And fair warning to Illinois fans, Illinois is going to turn the ball over at some point. Like, it's going to happen. It happened. I mean, Baylor beat Iowa State early in the year. They turned the ball over 20 times. Like, it's just – that is just a part of their DNA and what they do. So don't get discouraged when you see that. But if you're Illinois, man, like, you have every right to be confident. You have every right to feel like this is the next game on the schedule, take care of business, and we got bigger things in mind. And that should be the mindset.
All right, Mike, since we probably won't talk to you on the pod until next week, I just want to get your thoughts. If they are fortunate enough to advance the Elite Eight – I'm still in a Derek Burson, Brad Underwood term there – what do you think – of Illinois versus UConn, because I don't see the Huskies losing to San Diego State. As good as San Diego State is, UConn is a beast of a team.
Yeah, I mean, you got a couple of Final Four matchups in Boston potentially. I mean, these are two teams in Iowa State and UConn that very well could be playing for a title, a Final Four, and those are the teams you gotta get through. I mean, UConn, they've lost one game since December 20th. Right. I mean, they have it all. Yeah. Really. I mean, you go down the line, whether it's Cam Spencer, you know, they got, you know, Castle, Tristan Newton. We just saw what Donovan Klingon did in that game against Northwestern, 10 blocks. I mean, they have the rim protection, they have the shooting, they have, and then, you know, they have one of the best tacticians in college basketball with Hurley. I mean, their tempo is a little bit slower because what they do offensively is a lot of actions. It's misdirections, it's pin downs, it's floppy action on the baseline. It's, hey, we got our shooters coming off this way, we got Klingon rolling into the back. Like, there's a lot of really great stuff that they run. So if you're fortunate enough to get past Iowa State, and UConn's fortunate enough to get past San Diego State. You know, it is going to be, man, I mean, you want to talk UConn about fans high level game. It's going to be, honestly, I mean, it's going to be the best team that Illinois has played in, I don't know how many years. Honest to God, like, I don't know how many years it's been since Illinois would played a team this, you know, this good. I crazy to say, like, 05.
I was going to say 2005, like, the UNC national championship team?
Really,
game.
Like, they're that good. So, you know, it'll be a challenge.
Great stuff as always, Mike. Can't wait to see these games, hopefully games, in Boston. But what a run it's been, and we'll continue to talk about it, whether it's the end of a season or previewing a Final Four next week, man.
I'm hoping we're previewing some more teams, man. That'd be great.
That'd be fun. Mike Latoop, you're the goods, man.
Appreciate it.
Phenomenal stuff from Mike Latoop. All right, so the guys were a little bit rested. We get home. We get 48 hours actually at home, unlike the, 16 hours we had after the Big Ten tournament. But we are geared up, ready to go to Boston, make our flight Tuesday night here. And then we'll have some media availability on Wednesday afternoon and the game on Thursday. Piper's wanting to hit up Fenway, so maybe we'll do a tour of Fenway Park, take the boys on the Freedom Trail, one of my favorite cities to visit. But of course, business trip for the Illini, and we hope to see many of you out there. It's a great city to get to, and heard it's supposed to be 50 degrees, something like that. Hopefully better than Omaha, because that was some freezing cold weather in Omaha, Nebraska. But we'll get out there, and we'll cover it the way we've been covering it, which we've been really proud of. If you need more Mike Latoop, by the way, great film room breakdown. He was teasing it during this podcast. The VIP film rooms of Mike, these scouts he's been giving us. Man, I am just ready for the game. I know what Iowa State's going to do. I know the challenges. I know the keys for what Illinois is going to do. So to see it in visual form of Mike breaking down, cutting up this film, it's an absolute joy to see. And he makes us basketball smarter. So if you're not a VIP member, sign up now. 30% off, more than $40 off your first year. Michael Tulip's film breakdowns, as well as Jay Layman's football film breakdowns in the fall, worth the price of admission by itself. So sign up now for VIP membership there. Thank you for listening to the Illini Choir podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a follow, rating, review. We appreciate when you guys do that. Check us all out on YouTube. You can see our interviews there. You can get the interviews with the players after the game, the post-game stuff as well. And, of course, our live podcasts for the post-game. We do them all on our YouTube channel. So subscribe to us there. Hit that notifications bell. Hit the like button. We appreciate all your support there. All right, everybody, have a great day. Take care of each other. We'll talk to you live from Boston next time on the Illini Choir podcast.
Bye, everybody.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.